Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Joseph Hodge, who is the director of the current Playmakers production, Cyrano de Bergerac. Man, it's a wild production compared to some of the serious productions that we've had at the Playmakers before. Got this, you know, Cyrano, large-nosed poet, romantic, great, heroic fighter, a wonderful guy. But on this Playmaker stage, it seems like he's got hundreds of other people on the stage with him, with sword fights and with mob scenes and all that. So how do they do it? The guy responsible for all that is the director, Joseph Hodge, who's an alumnus of the graduate program in drama at Carolina, and back here, Joseph, at least for the second time directing, you had a wonderful production last year.
That's right.
Not the wonderful World War One set.
That's right. Not about heroes,
yeah.
Yes.
Different, man, you're directing different kinds of plays, aren't you? These are two different plays.
Yeah, it's, you know, careful what you pray for. I did, when we did Not About Heroes last year, which was, of course, a two-actor play, we were talking about what I might do for them next. I said, well, I want to do something big. And careful what you pray for. So we're doing Cyrano and his 27, 28 actors.
Is it 27? I counted 100.
Yeah.
It seems
there are about 100 characters, but they're played by 27 actors because many of them, of course, double and triple and quadruple the various roles that they play.
Well, just to get started, help me along. Cyrano de Bergerac is a character that has become legendary. And has done it without, so far as I know, being Disney-fied. You know, I mean, he's done it on its own. But he's a relatively new creator, just a little bit more than 100 years. And what I'd love, I know you studied this, is to tell us the story of Cyrano and the story of his creation.
Well,
I guess with the start of the play.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a kind of story that the French love. Of course, it's the story. It is the story of Beauty and the Beast. You know, it's it was written at a time when there was such a love of going to the theater in Paris. In the 1890s, 500,000 Parisians went to the theater every week, and more than twice that number went to the theater at least once a month, which is, of course, almost unimaginable for us today. They lived for the theater. And so Rostand wrote a piece. I mean, it's...
Tell us about the playwright.
Edmond Rostand wrote the play in 1897 in Paris, and it was one of the great sensations in Western drama. Opening night of that play was one of the great opening nights in the history of Western theater. And, you know, something like 40 curtain calls.
That's got to be legendary.
Well, perhaps it's apocryphal, but there are stories everywhere. I've done so much research and from a variety of sources. They apparently stood and cheered for ages, and two men who were supposed to have fought a duel the next day put aside their swords and decided instead that they were friends. it's one of the legendary openings. And then, of course, it ran for 500 plus performances. In Paris, and it's just one of the great theater happenings, maybe ever.
What is the, just in a word or two, what is the, we know Cyrano and his big nose.
Yeah.
And what is the rest of, what is the story, and why do you, tell it in the way that you think made it so compelling back then, and then.
Well, I think I think we all relate to Cyrano. I mean, Cyrano has this big nose, and because he has this big nose, he thinks he's not worthy of the love of the woman that he adores from a distance. And nobody can tell him that it's not that important, the size of your nose, because he's a brilliant poet, he's a brilliant swordsman, he's heroic, he's chivalric, he's an extraordinary a person in so many ways, and all he can see for himself is that great nose on his face, and thinks he can't have the girl on account of it. And those ways that perhaps all of us can identify with. And I think it's why the story has lived on for over 100 years. I think we all know what that's like.
That we imagine ourselves to be great poets and great, but we know that we've got these a defect or two.
A defect or a limitation or something that we think makes us unworthy of love or unworthy of success or attention.
You usually think about this as a – well, I get my sexist. I get caught. But you usually think of this as a female trait in some respects, that women are more conscious of their appearance in some respects, and they look at these little things, these minor imperfections that don't get that don't really get in the way of them being very attractive, but
yes.
they worry about them
yes.
and cover them up and think that they're
yes.
unworthy. Well, that men oftentimes are macho, and they think they're good looking even when
right,
they're not.
Right, but I mean, it is a very good play for now for exactly that, where we're obsessed with this idea of perfection and obsessed with an idea of physical perfection. And I think what the play really, the question it really wrestles with is the question of where does beauty really reside? Where does it truly reside? And we live in a culture that attributes all kinds of great things to those who are most beautiful, physically beautiful. So I think it's a very good play for now.
Tell us now. Mm-hmm. Tell us the story, the widely known story.
Cyrano loves a woman who is beautiful by any objective standard. Everybody thinks she's very, very beautiful, including Cyrano. And Cyrano's in love with her, and he refuses to get near her because he's afraid that she'll laugh at him and laugh at his nose. Well, along comes the character of Christiane, who is a young cadet who is, in fact, physically beautiful. And she's Roxanne loves Christiane, and Cyrano knows that. And Christiane loves Roxanne, and Cyrano learns that. And Christiane's failing is that he's a bright, articulate, passionate, beautiful person, but he comes undone in the presence of women, and he becomes inarticulate and unable to complete a sentence. So Cyrano offers to be the words for Christiane. He says to Christiane, you lend me your face and I'll lend you my words, and together we'll make one storybook hero. So Christiane, he writes letters for Christiane. He rehearses with Christiane and helps him be able to impress Roxanne, and Roxanne's very bright, and she likes intelligence, she likes wit, she likes poetry, and of course all the words are Cyrano's. They're not Roxanne's. They're not Christiane's. And then what happens? It proceeds on from there. I don't want to give it away for anybody who doesn't know the story.
Well, the story, Ian, is kind of like the Christmas story in the sense that you know the story, but you keep going back to the.
Yeah.
You keep going back to the pageant. Anyway, I think that the
– That's right.
It's almost richer when you know the story and you so I'm trying to persuade you to tell us a little bit more.
Yes. Eventually, Christiane realizes that they have to go out to battle. There's a fight. There's a siege at Arras. The French are besieging the Spanish. The cadets have to go. Cyrano and Christiane and all the cadets are called out there. It's been a long, several-month siege. Roxanne goes out to see them, has a meeting with Christiane, learns that Roxanne really loves him for his soul alone and not for how he looks but for how he thinks, which makes Christiane understand that who Roxanne really loves is Cyrano.
Mm-hmm.
And so Christiane says to Cyrano, you tell her that that you love her and let her choose between us. And Cyrano agrees. And Cyrano is about to pose that question to her. And Christiane says, you ask her. I'm going to go see what they do at the end of the post. You find this answer. And Christiane goes off stage. And Cyrano is about to tell Roxanne about his love for her. And Christiane is shot. And he comes back in. And he's dying. And the last thing Cyrano says to him, which isn't true, is that he says to Christiane, I told her everything. She chose you. Mm. And Christiane dies. And so Roxanne believes that the one person in her whole life that she could ever love has died. And Cyrano clearly has made a commitment not to destroy
noble
that,
soul.
Not to share that. And then And which takes us to the last act of the play, which is 15 years later, and Roxanne has been living in a convent all this time, and Cyrano comes once a week to visit, and Cyrano has had a terrible injury, and he comes, even though he's on death's door, to talk to her this last time, and he asks to read the last letter that Christian had written, which of course was the letter that Cyrano had written, and he reads it, and she realizes in hearing him read it that it was in fact him all these 15 years and all that time. And you know, when she knows, she has such a beautiful line in the play where she said, when she realizes that it's been Cyrano all along, and she says, I've loved only one man in all my life, and I have lost him twice. And and then Cyrano dies, and it all ends that way. But it, but it's a very funny play, and a lot of great things. There's a lot of swordplay and a lot of comedy and a lot of and the way that Rostand crashes together the tragic and the comic and these big sweeping crowd scenes and these small detailed two person and three person scenes, and I just love the collisions of these various styles that I think makes the play just such a thrilling and beautiful and moving experience for an audience.
It's a tragedy, but it's comic all the way through.
It is. It refuses to be any one thing. I mean, it's a comedy where our central character dies at the end. It's a play where our hero is somebody who's unattractive. That never happens in play. It just sort of breaks all these traditions, all these ideas. So it's a comedy, but it doesn't. And it's also not a tragedy. It's this strange amalgam that somehow, some strange alchemy, makes it just an extraordinary piece of theater, which is why it's been done. It's never fallen out of the repertory in over 100 years.
Well, let's talk some more about it after we take this quick break. I'm talking to Joseph Hodge, who is the director of the Playmakers' current production, Cyrano de Bergerac. We'll be right back.
Take your mind off taxes and treat yourself to the final week of Birdhouses on Parade at the Carolina Inn. This creative display of one-of-a-kind birdhouses and feeders crafted by North Carolina artists is only open through Sunday, April 23rd, and then it's over until next year. Drop by anytime to see these wonderful creations or linger after lunch, dinner, or afternoon tea, and choose which birdhouse or feeder you like to take home with you. All items are available for purchase and may be picked up after April 18th. Call 918-2711. Or click on CarolinaInn.com to reserve your spot for the final week of special spring events. And while you're there, why not enjoy a wonderful meal at the Carolina Crossroads? Call 918-2711 to celebrate spring with Birdhouses on Parade at the Carolina Inn. Not just for the birds, but for your enjoyment.
And now, here's Deborah Miller from A Southern Season.
From our legendary Tar Heels to our incomparable quality of life, our hometown pride is evident at every turn. Named one of America's outstanding retailers at the International Fancy Food Show, we're bursting at the seams with award-winning gifts of good taste, glorious flavors, and gustatory delights. Our family of customers extends far and wide, but we wouldn't even think of calling anywhere else home.
A Southern Season, Chapel Hill's landmark gourmet emporium at University Mall.
Who's Talking with D.C. Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of Shrimp and Grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned in the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.C. Martin. My guest is Joseph Hodge. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Just keep going, telling us about this great play and your attraction for it. Let me ask the question this way. Mm-hmm. The Playmakers wanted you to come back to direct the play, mm-hmm. and this was on the agenda. It's a big play.
Yeah.
And was it a play that you'd been interested in before, or did you have?
Oh, I've been interested in it for years. I love the play, I have loved it for many, many years. But it's not a play that you choose. and then decide to go see if you find an actor who can play the role. I mean, it's rather like doing Hamlet. You don't decide that your theater is going to do Hamlet and then go find out if anybody's good enough to play the role. It's a play I think you choose if you know you have an actor who has the gifts to be able to deliver the central performance.
This is Cyrano is such an important figure that you I think I'm understanding. You have to have the character. You have to have that already set in order to commit to do it.
If you don't have a Cyrano, you can't choose the play. You just can't. And there are so few actors who can actually play the role. I mean, I think I can't think of a more demanding role in this regard. You need somebody. He's supposed to be this brilliant swordsman, Cyrano is. So you need somebody who is athletic and somebody really skilled to do the sword play convincingly.
We'll come back to that. Wow. Mm-hmm. All right, but now, I know the answer to the question, so I'm not going to ask it quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
But forget about the person who is our Cyrano.
Mm-hmm.
And who would be other people in the acting world that we might know, movie actors or soap opera actors or athletes or anybody that you would go who would meet this character, this requirement
that
if somebody else invited you to come, now you're the great Cyrano director. If somebody said, come do Cyrano at our place, who are some of the people you can think of, or even if we might not know them?
Yeah.
Not a large group of people.
I can honestly say, I'm not trying to dodge this, I can honestly say that if somebody called and said, come do Cyrano for me, I'd have to say, can I bring my guy? Because I don't know anybody else who can do it.
Wow.
I mean, I just don't. And not at that level. I mean, not that well. Because of all, again, I know many, many fantastic, fantastic world-class actors. You need somebody who can do the fights. You need somebody who can handle the language, and you need somebody with a soul big enough to tell the story. And it's just very, very hard to find that combination of skills in a single actor. So you don't do the play unless you have the guy.
How'd the negotiations go with you? All right, well, let's tell everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, probably everybody who knows the Playmakers has already guessed that it's...
Yeah, it's Ray Dooley. It's Ray Dooley. I worked with Ray on that Not About Heroes a year ago, and I'm flatly in awe of his skills.
And was he here when you were a student?
No, he wasn't.
So you got to know him as a professional later.
That's right. Much later.
Yes,
much later. I got to see him work on King Lear two seasons ago, and then last season we worked together on Not About Heroes, and I really enjoyed working with him on that. And then when I was talking to Playmakers about this season and what we might do together, I offered Cyrano and said, I think you should, and I think you've got the guy, and I'm dying to direct it, so please let me.
Wow.
And I think in the end, I'm just so thrilled that in the end they saw fit to do that play and to do it with Ray.
All right. Well, just pushing you, would you have done it if Ray were not available? Can you?
If they would have called me and said, we're doing Cyrano de Bergerac, would you like to come direct it? I think I'd say yes. Sure. I'd say yes because I'd want to do the play. But then you are just rolling the dice, praying that you go to New York and you find in auditions or that you call people that you know and see if – I mean, there are people who I know.
Let me ask you this, Joseph, and I don't want to get too far off on a tangent about it, but I'm curious about this play, which, as you mentioned, has stayed in – it's stayed in the repertoire since its opening in
That's
the
right.
late 1890s.
Mm-hmm.
So that – like with Hamlet and with other Shakespearean productions, there get to be – the best Hamlet is so-and-so, or the best Macbeth is so-and-so. But there's not a – until maybe this production, there's not somebody who is the best Cyrano.
Well, there is for a lot of people. I mean, it is one of those plays. It's like a Romeo and Juliet. Like, everybody thinks they've seen the best Romeo. They think they've seen the best Hamlet. They think they've seen the best Juliet. They think they've seen the best. It definitely is one of those roles. And, you know, one has to be very careful because, you know, there are, you know, Jose Ferrer, of course, played it in the 1940s in a movie for which he won an Oscar. And I think he's very good in it. There's the Gerard Depardieu, which was only, maybe about 10 years ago.
These are movies.
There was a famous production that came over in 1985 with Derek Jacobi playing Cyrano, which I've also seen. I think maybe the best of all, of the ones I've seen, I think maybe the best is Peter Donat playing the role at ACT in San Francisco for Bill Ball in the mid-70s with Marsha Mason playing Roxanne. You know, I mean, this is what makes horse races, but to my mind, Ray's better than any of them.
Wow.
He is. I mean, Derek Jacobi.
I think so. Well, I just have to agree. I haven't seen all of those productions, but and it's hard to say because you're talking about some of the great actors.
Yes.
But I've never seen a stage production. I've seen movies, which are a whole different thing.
That's right.
In the sense. But, man, you get up there and watch David. I mean, you watch Ray up there swinging the sword around and jumping around and then moving to the next scene, and he's doing poetry coming out of his soul. It's kind of tough. It's kind of a tough thing.
And then the fifth act is 15 years later, and you have to – I mean, I'm just so admiring of Ray. There's a thing he – you know, he comes on in that first scene, and, you know, we have him he's in a wig. He's in his hat. He's in his musketeer thing. And the way he can just shrug off 20 years and come out there and work is – amazing to me. And then at the end of the play, when it's 15 years later and he's had this head injury and he comes in seeing those years added on to him. I mean, he's just an actor with rare gifts, rare and extraordinary gifts.
We love him.
Enough.
And
I
think everybody in Chapel Hill who's listening will not be surprised about your evaluation of Ray Dooley, and happy that we got a chance to see him, maybe in one of the better roles for him. Yes. We better take a break. I'm talking to Joseph Hodge, who is the director of Cyrano de Bergerac. It's the final Playmakers production for the season, but he and I will be right back.
The Junior League of Durham and Orange Counties has opened the door to the Designer Show House 2006. Every year, the Junior League transforms a single-family residence into a showplace. The best area designers and landscapers have worked hard to renovate this amazing English Tudor home located in historic Forest Hills. And now the public is invited to tour the Designer Show House and see the beautiful restoration. Open April 30th through May 14th. Visit jldoc.org for tickets and more information.
This is Congressman Mel Watt, and I'm supporting Adam Stein for Superior Court Judge. Growing up during the Civil Rights Movement, I saw people risk their careers and even their lives to bring equal opportunity to all Americans. Among those heroes is my former law partner, Adam Stein. At a time when North Carolina had separate drinking fountains for blacks and whites, Adam Stein joined Julius Chambers to form the first integrated law firm in North Carolina, fighting for civil rights across the state. When their law office was firebombed, they refused to back down. Adam Stein has fought for justice and equality his entire life. He's one of our country's finest attorneys who's open-minded, honest, and fair. Adam Stein, unmatched legal experience, a life dedicated to justice. Please vote Adam Stein for Superior Court Judge on May 2nd.
Paid for by Adam Stein for Superior Court Judge Committee.
Who's Talking with D.Z. Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of shrimp and grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned to the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Joseph Hodge is the director of the Playmakers' current production, Cyrano de Bergerac. We've been talking about Ray Dooley, and wow, I mean, I'd go see anything. But this is, as you pointed out, a play that matches his great talents. But there are a bunch of other people on the stage.
Yes, indeed.
And it's we're not used to that with Playmakers productions usually. I mean, from time to time we get a large cast, but more often than not, it's a modern production with concentrating on a few actors, and including the production that you did last year, Not About Heroes, was not a big cast.
Yes.
How you've got, did you tell me, almost 30 people that you've
That's
got
to right.
manage.
That's
what are
right.
the challenges that a director faces in working with so many people, some of whom have big egos in their own notions of the way things ought to be done? And
well, sure. I don't worry about those things. I mean, we just work, and it's a very mature ensemble, and it's a mature group of people. And so, you know, massaging egos, thankfully, has not been part of the equation. There is, you know, you have 30 people in a room, and you really do have to decide where you're going to spend your time. And what, so you, not everybody can get the same amount of attention. You're doing a play with two actors in it. Well, you can give all your attention to those two actors. And in a play this big, one has to, you know, so nobody gets, the simple fact is nobody gets sufficient attention. I mean, you're continually bringing one section up to speed, realizing that another section has been paid small attention to, and getting that up to speed and realizing that the one you'd worked on before has sort of slipped back a half step, and getting that back up to speed. So you do a lot of that. And in a play this big also, you're losing a lot of rehearsal hours in terms of what you might spend on the acting for sword fights. It takes dozens and dozens and dozens of hours to get those sword fights
up to speed.
All right,
let's break from and mm-hmm. talk about the sword fights.
Yes.
Because when I watch this play, I have to say, I mean, this is like going to a wrestling match.
Yeah.
In the sense that yes. it is fake, but it looks really real.
Yeah.
And this is not the talent for this kind of fighting, and it looks like they're real swords, buddy. Mm-hmm. I hope they're not, but they are really up there fighting with swords. Mm-hmm. And I can take this in the movies, but on stage, right up there close, this is hard stuff. And where do you get the? You got to have people who coach you. I mean, how do you get this?
Yeah,
stuff?
Well, you know, we had a very interesting thing happen. We had hired a fight director named John Stead, who's one of the handful of the great, great fight directors. He was he's in Canada. He does a lot of TV and film, and he's also the fight director for the Stratford Festival. In Canada. And he's just one of the great, great fight directors. I'd worked with him some years ago, and I'd asked him to come and do this. Well, he works on a lot of TV and films. He's a stunt coordinator, and he does stunts on these movies too. Well, just a few days before we were to start rehearsal, he's doing a 60-foot high fall for a movie, and he hits the bag badly, and he tears up one of his legs, the hamstring detaches from the bone. I mean, hideous. He's fine, thank goodness.
He's a teacher and director and a stuntman too.
That's right. And he can't come do Cyrano. And we've been talking for months about what we needed to do with the fights, how we were going to do them, how we were going to approach them, et cetera, et cetera. And here, I can't remember exactly, but maybe a week before first rehearsal, I get the call from him saying, I'm going into surgery and I tore up my leg and I'm going to be okay, but I can't come. So we hire – he was going to come with an assistant, a woman named Carol Wooten, who's also a fight director in her own right a significant fight director. And so we hired his assistant to come and do the fights for us. And she was fantastic. But she and I hadn't been having conversations with her for months about what it is we wanted to do. So it was just a big race trying to get up to speed and getting a lot of the people who fight in the play. Not Ray has a lot of fight experience. A couple of the other guys in the play also have significant fight experience.
Fight means sword fighting or
stage fighting have experience. There's a particular kind of training for how one does fights for the stage and does them safely. And they teach hand-to-hand, which is in fact taught in the graduate program by their excellent movement coach, Craig Turner. But there's also armed combat with rapier, daggers, quarterstaffs, et cetera, which gets taught. And a lot of the students, a lot of the people who do the sword fights in our play haven't had any background in it at all. So the learning curve was very steep for them. And just in terms of learning the vocabulary and learning how to do a fight, be able to perform a fight, repeat it again and again safely.
How did you get there?
Well, you know, Kara puts swords in everybody's hands and talks them through a little at a time, and then choreographs each small piece of each of those little fights. So you have a battle scene with 20 people on stage. Well, each of those that battle is broken down into its smallest pieces, and each of those things are worked till they know each of the actors knows.
It's precise dance.
It's
all the way through.
It's choreography. That's why they call it fight choreography. I mean, it is a dance. It's exactly right, and every single move is defined and repeated. Every lunge forward, every step back, every parry, every blow, every thrust, every cut, everything. So dozens of hours, which would typically be spent in another kind of a play on solving the acting moments of a piece, are spent with fight rehearsals.
It does pay off. In the sense that that the audience craves action.
Yes.
And modern drama very, very nicely delivers regularly provocative ideas. But those of us in the audience love this this activity.
You're absolutely
right. But as you're pointing out, it cost a lot of time and effort to deliver that.
Yes.
Piece of it.
Yeah, it just takes, you know, it takes.
Now, have you ever done anything directing wise as with as many swords swinging?
I've never directed anything this big, and I'm comforted by the fact that most people have never directed anything this big. There are very few plays bigger than Cyrano. There just aren't many, and those that are, nobody ever produces because they're far too expensive to make. So I feel, you know, I feel flattered to have been given the opportunity.
Let me pursue the sword fighting again. I apologize for getting far off on that.
Okay.
But I've worried about the safety of the actors on stage. And so I want you to tell me, even if they make a mistake, nobody's going to get rammed. Nobody's going to get killed. Maybe they'll get a scratch or something. I mean, are there some safety things? Because it can't work perfectly every time.
That's right. I mean, there are safeties built in. There are... They're trained. Accidents do happen. Unfortunately, none have happened on this show, and hopefully won't. And we talked to the actors about this too. That, you know, this isn't a play about, you know, two actors sitting on a sofa. It is it's an athletic event as much as anything else. There is the chance of injury, and so their bodies have to be warm. Their concentration has to be total. Because those blades, while the blades don't have edges, they're steel blades. While the point on the swords are blunted, they're still metal points. So, you know, there is an element of danger involved, and it's taken very, very seriously. That we do a fight call before every run of the play. So we spend 40 minutes just with a fight captain, a designated fight captain who's designated by the fight director. In our case, Grant Goodman, who plays Christian, who's an excellent fighter. Who watches all the fights, gives the actors notes, reminds them of their targets and safety issues, etc. And we do that every night before each performance. We run through every one of the fights in the play.
So, in a sense, the rehearsal on this aspect of it continues during the opening night.
That's right,
all the way through.
And beyond. It's not rehearsal in the sense of, oh, I have a new idea, let's try
right.
it. But in terms of practicing it every night before you actually do it, going through it, marking it, making sure everybody knows exactly what they're doing and are reminded of it each night. That's what we do.
Well, yeah. Joseph Hodge, director of Playmakers production of Cyrano de Bergerac. Let's take a break and we'll come back and talk some more about the play.
WCHL 1360, time now for Biography for Radio with Jack Perkins, brought to you locally by the Cedars and East-West Partners community.
Within a day of being born, she was already a celebrity in Canada. Her story next on Biography for Radio.
Do you know your credit score? You should, because staying on top of your credit could help save you thousands of dollars. You can now get your credit score and credit report at freecreditreport.com.
I go online and in seconds, I get my credit report and credit score free.
I can even print it right off my computer.
Staying on top of my credit helped me save a lot of money.
Get your free credit report and score with enrollment and triple advantage at freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
It was July 1st, 1967, and Canada had just turned 100 years old. The first Canadian to be born that day was a baby girl in Ladysmith, British Columbia. It was an auspicious start. As a teenager, she was nothing special. She wore braces, played the saxophone, and excelled in sports. But in 1988, she was at a football game when the roving eye of a television camera flashed her smile on the big screen. The crowd erupted. She was wearing a t-shirt emblazoned with the logo of Canadian brewer Labatt's. The company saw its chance and hired her to promote its beer. She was then discovered by Playboy magazine. The publicity set off her television career with a role in the TV comedy Home Improvement, and then the smash hit drama series that brought her fame worldwide. But with celebrity also came pain. In 1998, she accused her rock star husband of abuse. Later, she was plagued by a stalker and found to have caught hepatitis C from a tattoo needle. Her troubles, however, have done little to tarnish her popularity. For many, she will always remain the deliciously watchable lifeguard C.J. Parker on the Baywatch television series. Actress Pamela Anderson. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D.
Biography for Radio, brought to you on WCHL by the Cedars of Chapel Hill and East West Partners Community. The Cedars is the country's premier retirement community. Call 929-1995 to find out more on this very special community. Life has been good to you. Now it gets even better at the Cedars of Chapel Hill. Who's Talking with DZ Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of Shrimp and Grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned in the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DZ Martin. I'm talking to Joseph Hodge, the director of the Playmakers' final production for the season, Cyrano de Bergerac. And as we've learned earlier, it is a fantastic production, a big, big, bold, lots of people, lots of action. And I apologize, Joseph, for talking so much about the sword fights, because there's so much more to the play than just the action.
Indeed.
But the action sure keeps you awake.
Sure
you
don't, does. It
don't
does.
See too many people
That's
going
right.
to sleep
That's
in,
right.
the, in the stand. And it's part of what many of the Playmakers fans have been begging for, which is give us something that we, even if we're intellectually not up to par, we can follow the action as
yeah.
you've given it to us.
Oh, yeah.
All right, but there's more to it. Why does the play – the play maybe sustains its popularity because of the action scenes and all that, but there's more to it. What's behind the continuing, in your view, popularity of the play?
Well, I think it is that Beauty and the Beast story, mm-hmm. you know, and it is that question of – what is it that we love when we love somebody, and where does beauty reside, and what do we respond to in a person, and how much of it is our physical attraction to somebody, and how much of it is it about our soul's attraction, our emotional attraction, our intellectual attraction to someone? And the play, you know, the play poses these questions and wrestles with these questions in interesting ways, I think.
This for this playwright, this is it for him, isn't it? Is this?
Yeah, it's it. I mean, he wrote a couple of other plays, but I guess his Chanticleer is a little bit known and a little bit done, mm-hmm. but nothing like this. Yeah, it's not like Shakespeare, where there are many, many, many great plays from him.
The other thing that's interesting to me is that while many of us, I mean, most people, as part of our cultural tradition, that we know who Cyrano de Bergerac is. At least we know about the big nose and the complicated romance. But we do not know, most of us do not know the name of the playwright associated with him. We know his character, mm-hmm. but we don't give him credit. It may be in drama circles that's different, but in the popular circles,
I think even in, he wrote one great play. He wrote one great play, and it is a great play. And I have to say, spending months and months and months with this play now, I mean, it's been well over a year since I've known I was going to direct it. And you look at it, and the play shouldn't work. I mean, there are a lot of reasons
really?
Why the thing shouldn't work, because there isn't a single scene in the play, it seems to me, that we haven't gone, oh, that. We've seen that 100 times. Every scene in the play, we go, oh, we've seen that 100 times. But there's some strange alchemy in the way he puts them together, in the way that this narrative unfolds. It's a peculiar alchemy that adds up to something that feels to me much greater than the sum of its parts. And I'm not exactly sure what to attribute that to. I don't know. It's a very special play.
Well, there are two aspects of it. One is that moving from the French to the English in translation, sometimes you hear, that's a difficult task. And are there different translations for this play, or is there a classic one that everybody uses?
That's a very good question. There are well over a dozen published different translations of this play, different people having a shot at translating it in their own way. Some are in verse, some are in prose, some are in a combination of verse and prose. The two that are most often done, one is by a guy called Brian Hooker, which was done written in 1923. This is the one that the José Ferrer movie is based on, was sort of the received English language text until the 1970s. In the 1970s, Anthony Burgess, who wrote A Clockwork Orange, did an adaptation of Cyrano, which was done quite a bit then and till now. Till now, those two texts are the ones that are most often used. When I got around to reading all the different texts and deciding which translation I wanted to use, I must have read a dozen of them. I didn't find any of them that really fit my needs. I wanted something that didn't spend 20 minutes waiting for scenery for each act. I wanted something that wasn't 3.5 hours. I think some plays can be 3.5 hours. I'm not sure Cyrano is one of them. I just wanted something leaner. I wanted something that didn't stop so often to admire itself. And I realized that in the Brian Hooker from the 1920s, it's very much a product of its time, that translation. It took a florid text and made it just even more florid. I just felt the play kept stopping to admire itself so much, and I wanted it to keep moving forward.
Now, this is more than a translation question. This is an adaptation question.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. So I talked to the Playmakers people, and I said, "Listen, we're several months away. We're not in any huge hurry here. I want to take a shot at doing my own adaptation of it. I want to go and there are two very early translations of the play. In the year after Rostand wrote the play, there were 4 English language translations. I took 2 of them. One that was written in verse." And one that was written in prose.
Did Rostand, was his in verse originally, or did
his is in verse?
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. The Rostand is in verse. I found 2 translations that were done within a year, both by women. One in verse, one in prose, and they weren't perfect, but I liked them. I liked that they were lean. I liked that they didn't dress up Rostand. It was quite dressed up enough already, And I found them to be leaner and more muscular and more forward-moving, which were things I really wanted. So using those 2 public domain early translations of the play, one in verse and one in prose, and a workman's knowledge of French using the Rostand text, using those 3 as a key to the play, I made my own adaptation of it. I had said to the PRC folks, let me take a shot at it. We're still far enough out. I'm not going to be thin-skinned about it. Let me hand it to you. You guys read it, and let's decide what we want to do. And no is a perfectly acceptable answer, and if we don't like it, then it's not like we don't have a dozen extant texts that we can choose from. So I spent a couple of months working on the adaptation, and the folks at Playmakers liked it. Ray liked it. The designers liked it. All the major stakeholders in the piece liked it well enough to think that it was worth pursuing. So we went ahead and went forward with,
well,
with that
adaptation. That's a brave, I mean, that's an audacious thing to do, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of foolish. Yeah, yeah, it's silly. But and there is the danger. You know, I was very careful in rehearsing the play in terms of how we put the piece together. Having done the adaptation, and because I'm directing it, I think there's real danger of having too much authorship of the event. So I tried to move myself away in the early going, in particular with the actors, and let them really tell me what they wanted to do with these characters. Because there's the danger of just having one too much of one person's voice.
Generally, you have the playwright as an independent, independent with a
entity.
And with appropriate appreciation that you don't change those words without. You know, a real conference, I guess. Very, very seldom do that. But that the director has got all kinds of license to put his imprint on it by how those words are brought to the stage. And then you have to do, if you're the adapter, in this sense, the playwright, a partial creator of it, you're all caught up in a bind.
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, when you're dealing with somebody else's play, then you feel every right to pull at it and doubt it and love it. And it's a tension that is very good for making a play. It's very good creatively. It's very good to question everything the playwright's done and ask the difficult – whether the playwright's living or dead – to ask the difficult questions of the play and whether or not it's suiting your needs. And it's a difficult equation when you've done the adaptation as well and you're directing. Because who do you wrestle with?
I wish, you know, this is a whole nother program, and we've run out of time on this one. But I hate to stop this discussion, which I'm real interested in the role that you play. Yeah. Main thing is that you've created, both as a director and an adapter, a magnificent production that I've certainly enjoyed seeing and think everybody in Chapel Hill ought to see. So thanks.
Well, thank you for saying so. It's really been my pleasure.
Thanks all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.
News Talk 1360 WCHL presents the 2006 Chapel Hill Carrboro Orange County Forum, Thursday, April 20th, live from a Clamrock Hall on the campus of Vilcom Circle. This forum features 10 hours of commentary and discussion among town and university officials, local business owners, representatives from local service organizations, and residents from our community, all focused on the important issues affecting our county. Topics include the relationship between the town and the university, workforce housing, crime and safety, Carrboro growth, community diversity, education, and more. Tune in to hear the many views of our community and call in during the forum, 929-9245, to offer your view as well. It's the 2006 Chapel Hill Carrboro Orange County Forum, Thursday, April 20th, from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m., live from a Clamrock Hall on the campus of Vilcom Circle and heard exclusively on News Talk 1360 WCHL. This forum is sponsored by Clayton Commercial, Crown Honda South Point, East-West Partners, Harrington Bank, Progress Energy, Ram Development, and Top of the Hill Restaurant and Brewery.
This is Gerald Ramoyne, General Manager of Performance Automall. Over the years, you've heard me talk about how proud we are to be a sponsor of WCHL's Village Pride Awards and about the great work we do in our sales and service departments. But nobody can describe our passion and commitment better than our employees. The people at Performance arrive each day committed to a special relationship with you, our neighbor.
I'm Guy Massey. I'm Subaru Service Manager here at Performance. Performance has been here for over 20 years. As Performance, we've grown. The community has let us grow. In my opinion, my humble opinion, the best Subaru service team here in the area. We've got some technicians that have been here since the first brick was laid for Performance. So, yeah, we've got a good team here. Performance can't be beat. Team Subaru can't be beat at Performance.
I couldn't have said it better. Every day we try to earn the right to be your car dealer as well as your neighbor, and when we say Performance can't be beat, we mean it.
And now it's time for Getting It Together, brought to you by Hold Your Own Organizing and Storage Solutions.
Open-toe shoes and seersucker suits. It's time for your spring wardrobe to come out of storage. This is Katrina Lamberto, professional organizer and productivity consultant, asking a few important questions about your clothes closet. Can you see your hanging clothes, find your shoes, and get access to your folded shirts and shorts? Is your closet bursting at the seams? When rotating seasonal wardrobes, donate or consign clothes you no longer wear. You can gain closet space by hanging adjustable rods, sweater shelves, and using tiered hangers for shirts and pants. Find your shoes on floor shelves, over the door racks, or hanging shelves. Redesign and customize your closet with the expert staff at Hold Your Own and their Freedom Rail system. For more of my tips, visit catlamd.com.
This has been Getting It Together, brought to you by Hold Your Own and Eastgate Shopping Center, organizing and storage solutions.
At home, at work, in the car. News Talk 1360, WCHL, Chapel Hill, Carrboro's News Talk and Tar Heel Station.